Today's episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-measured ingredients with mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip all those trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. You can now enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in 30 minutes or less. With over 25 recipes to choose from each week, there is something for everyone to enjoy. All recipes are designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure both deliciousness and simplicity. This week we had bourbon apple chicken with mashed potatoes, and it was delicious. The apples caramelized into this like sauce. Definitely try it. Go to the link in our show notes to get $80 off, including free shipping on HelloFresh, the number one meal kit.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. Guys, this was perhaps the most difficult case I've done in a way.
Really? Why?
I have never come across a case I wanted to do this badly with such limited resources.
Let me guess, it happened in 1952.
I feel like I would do better at that point because there'd be more newspaper articles. No, I mean, sure, it's an older case. It's late 80s. However, there was one unsolved mysteries case, and there was one, and maybe I can count a second kind of glossing over everything article about this case. There's no Reddit that I could find. There is no YouTube stuff that I could find.
Is there a Charlie Project?
He is listed in the Charlie Project.
Okay.
So all of those things were helpful, but it was very difficult for me. And there's another element of this case that actually has more information out there, which I'm going to cover at some point in the episode. But I just want you to know that if you choose to go looking into this case, you will be sorely disappointed.
Okay, so I just pulled up the Charlie Project, and in the first three sentences is the word cult.
Well, there you go.
So I'm excited. Dive in, please.
Okay, so the case I'm going to tell you about today, everyone, is the case of Charles Southern Jr. Charles Southern Jr. was born on July 25th of 1948. I have no information about Charles's youth or his family for the most part. From what it appears, this is just me kind of concluding based on what I know about his adult life, is that Charles is an educated man. Charles is kind and he's very intelligent naturally. Charles had a great curiosity for world religions and even traveled to understand more. As a young man, because Charles disappeared while he was a young man, Charles was employed as an English professor. I believe he was actually assistant chairman, but I do believe he was teaching as well. And he actually taught at a community college. So he has a successful career. He's able to teach. He's able to educate himself and explore things with curiosity, you know, by traveling. At some point, Charles joined a religious organization called the Conscious Development of Body, Mind, and Soul. And this was out of Dallas. They were a growing organization with Terry Hoffman as the head of the organization. Just really briefly, an overview is the movement believed that they were to fight against the Dark Lords and they had to protect themselves. The goal was to join God and the 12 masters through reincarnation in the spiritual realm. So in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they did interview Charles's sister and his mother, and they did describe Charles as being very interested in world religions, and he wanted very much to kind of identify with something bigger than himself, and he was probably easily drawn to something like this because of his want to understand more. The organization had several branches throughout the United States, so it grew in popularity at this point. And Charles joined the Chicago branch, which is where Charles was from. Like I said, his path and his passion was to find spiritual truth. And, you know, going back to him traveling, this was much of the reason why he traveled. And he went to places like India, or as far as India, to help him on his path to finding that. Charles was smart, and with that passion, he was able to teach eventually and run classes and got the attention of Terry Hoffman herself. Terry invited Charles to come to Dallas to meet her, and this was at her very own home, so I assume it was kind of a big honor. And she utilized people like Charles to create what she had called a psychic shield around her to protect her from the Dark Lords, who she thought were specifically out to get her. So again, in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they interviewed one or two people that were previous members of this organization. And they said, you know, you basically had to be, it was an honor to have taught these classes and to kind of preach about the organization. It was a special honor. And Terry had to know that you were serious about this movement if she was going to have you come and be a part of this psychic shield that she had created with other members. I believe people were surprised that he was there because they didn't recognize him as much as they did others. So,
not to interrupt you, but at some point, are you going to break down this religion and if it's still in existence and if anything stemmed from it or anything like that?
So actually, that's a really great question, and I am going to talk about Terry Hoffman and the religious movement. I mean, basically, you've got the idea of what this organization, if you will, is, but I'm going to tell you about Terry a little bit later. I really felt it important to start off this story telling about Charles and what happened to him.
Yes.
But we will get there, I promise.
And I agree 100%. I'm just very, to me, already this organization, and that word is using it very loosely, seems
I'm very choosy with my words today.
Yeah, seems to be. Go ahead. Just keep going.
Absolutely. It's funny that this landed this week, too. The last month or so, Melissa and I have been talking about organizations in general and what they mean and how people are susceptible to them, et cetera, et cetera. So I know where you're going with this because of our discussions, and we'll talk about it for sure. Around 1987, Charles's family found him in the streets, muttering, holding a newspaper, and sometimes speaking incoherently. Now, I sound like this is a little bit random because it sounds random when you're reading about him, because there's no lead up to these things. There's no even exact date that's given about when exactly this occurred. It's really guesstimates. However, I do understand this to be that it was a little bit random, if you will. In talking to previous members, they had stated that this organization pushed many people to a breaking point. I don't really know why that is. Maybe they felt tremendous pressure. Whatever, but this wouldn't have been the first time that it happened, and Charles was no different. So after his family found him in the streets, they brought him to the hospital and they checked him right in. Charles's mother stayed with him for about 5 days. So she was with him the whole way. And several days of his stay there, members of the organization showed up. And Charles's mother remembers that they all asked her to leave. I mean, Charles included, but like every time they would come to visit, it was like, can you just step out for a couple of minutes? And she had no idea why. She had no idea what they were saying. But that was that. Charles was eventually released after that 5 days, so it was brief, in a sense.
And do they know what caused it?
Nothing like that was ever addressed, like if he came out with a diagnosis or anything like that. Only that when he was released, he basically jumped back into what he was doing. He was working. He seemed to be the same Charles everyone knew and loved. And although he remained active in the organization, the only thing that people noticed that had changed after a stint in the hospital was that his passion really lacked with Terry and the organization, but not so much that he left. So, like I said, he's going about his normal routines, and he books a trip for December to go to India. So this is not weird. He's gone to India before. He travels all the time. He has a passport. So this was a normal Charles thing. So like I said, this trip was planned for December of 1987. However, a mom maybe knows when something isn't quite right with their kid. And it didn't sit right with Charles's mother. And she called and she checked in and she offered to come to Chicago to be with him. And she just wanted to make sure that he was okay. And he reassured him that he was fine and to just let it go. And I guess she felt reassured enough because she kind of did let it go. And off he went. He had stated at that time of their last conversation that he was set to leave in 2 or 3 days. Charles's family expected him to be home in about 2 weeks. That 2 weeks came and it passed, and they didn't hear from Charles. So the family made a roughly 300-mile trip to Chicago, to Charles's home. And they grew immediately worried when they entered his home. When they started to look around, they first noticed that Charles's passport was there and there was no stamp to India. So,
wait, what?
It wasn't even that Charles went to India and he didn't come back. It's that he couldn't have went to India at that point because there was no stamp in the passport. They also found a vial of the Charlie Project, I believe, says poison, but it's actually more comparable, it seems, to a vial of anesthetic. It's similar to a poison, but has an effect of an anesthetic in his desk, and it could actually only be injected, but there's no indication that it was empty, only that he had it, and why. And they found a letter from Charles that said something along the lines of, I'm under a bad influence and I have to get away. And lastly, probably the most eerie and disturbing thing of all, which did not make any sense to the family until a little bit later, was that Charles's clothing was folded inside out and left on a stool in his home. The family came to know later that this was a Nigerian tribal ritual for death. There was also what appeared to be a last will and testament stating that Terry Hoffman was to receive all of Charles's assets. That was the last time, that was the last bit of evidence that indicated anything about Charles whatsoever. There were no sightings of Charles. There has been no word about Charles. And like I said, I can't find any information about Charles Southern Jr. anywhere. So it truly feels to me as if he disappeared off the face of the earth after December of 1987. So there are two, possibly three theories. The first theory is Charles suffered from another break and he left his home and he went out in the world, and just by chance, he was never seen again. The other possibility is closely tied to this is, did he die by suicide? Could he have either left his home to die by suicide, or did he have a break, inevitably die by suicide? And the third theory is a more complex one, and that is, did the organization that Charles belonged to have something to do with Charles's death? So what I think I want to do in laying this out is there's a lot to say about the organization, and I want to get there. But I just want to explore the dying by suicide, and I want to explore having a mental break of some sort. And we might come back to there after we talk about the organization, but I think I want to start here. So first of all, tell me your thoughts about all of this, and then tell me your thoughts about Die by Suicide and walking away. Well, walking away with a mental break.
So here's the thing.
Here's the thing. This is where it starts.
I want to know why he was hospitalized. And that really gives me pause, because if he was hospitalized for some sort of ingestion of something toxic, that totally changes my opinion of what happens.
Well, there was no indication that there was anything in his system. However, I can't be certain of that. I don't know that the symptoms of what he experienced match the anesthetic that he had in his desk.
So I think I need you to break down the religion, because where I'm at right now is, if it was a mental break, it was from whatever he was ingesting, which I think was provided by the religion. Mm-hmm. Or if he died by suicide, I think it was likely a sacrifice for the religion.
Okay, let's unpack this one. The conscious development of body, mind, and soul was developed by Terry Hoffman. I'm not going to go into great detail about the life of Terry Hoffman, but I will give you a broad overview. Terry was born into a pretty dysfunctional home. If I remember correctly, I believe her mother died and her father was an alcoholic. And at the age of, I believe it's 9, she was placed in foster care. Her dad was, in essence, like, nope, done being a dad. Here you go, right into foster care. And Terry experienced what she or others might think of as just as, like, visions. They could be delusions, but, you know, to her, they were visions, and they were of religious nature. And, you know, she, in essence, got through all of that stuff with these visions. I guess maybe it made her feel less alone. I don't know. Anyway, she ends up getting married in her late teens, and she has a child, and she's very invested in meditation and being in touch spiritually in some way, shape, or form. And really quickly from this, she realizes that she does have an influence, and from this is created her organization. So fine. She has a following of people. She wants the path to spiritual enlightenment. Like I said, this organization really focused on, in essence, running from the Dark Lords and to achieve being close to God. She specifically believed that she was under attack or tempted or something most often. And she believed that everyone else should be kind of running from it too. So then we have, I think, a string of events is an understatement. And I'm going to tell you about them. So in 1976, at the time, Terry was married to Glenn Cooley. And for whatever reason, and he's entitled, he wanted out of this organization. They eventually divorced. And 5 days after the divorce was finalized, Glenn died of an OD of Valium and Librium.
I'm sorry, what?
Terry calmly went over to the safe and pulled out a piece of paper, and there was his assets, and she was named sole beneficiary and was able to receive those.
Of course it was.
A little while after Glenn's OD, a little while as in about 5 months, Terry married a man named Ben, and she then divorced him. Then in 1979, Terry's secretary and treasurer, Sandy, and her daughter were on vacation, and Sandy's daughter died. And then shortly thereafter that, Sandy and her housekeeper drove over a cliff to their death. Sandy's daughter, her trust fund, was left to Terry Hoffman.
Wait.
Amy, you're making my head hurt.
Robin Ostat, another follower, died by a revolver. She had no diseases. Mary Levinson, another follower, died of a drug overdose. Her life insurance changed right before her death, and her assets were left to Terry Hoffman. Don Hoffman, this is Terry's other husband, made a video stating that he had terminal cancer. It had been confirmed by 3 doctors. He had no chance of living, died by suicide, left Terry as beneficiary. His autopsy revealed no cancer. Jill Bonds was beaten to death.
Well, hold on.
The Goodmans died in a ritualistic double death. So those are just to name a few.
Hold on, though. The beaten to death gives me pause because the rest of them are all, you know, could be suicide or whatever. The beaten to death, though, implies someone else had to have been involved.
So as you can see, there's a very concerning
pattern,
string of deaths associated with, can we just call it a cult now?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not an expert, but in my opinion.
So, I mean, as of right now, Terry Hoffman has died as of 2014 or 2015. So we don't know the answer. So I guess the question is Charles's disappearance related to this circle of deaths that surrounds Terry Hoffman? And if you believe that, why?
So what I'm struggling with in my head, which I probably just need to say out loud because I'm trying to work through it, is all those people who were found, right? They likely all are deceased relating to the cult, but they were all found. So my struggle with Charles is, why would he hide his body?
Or why would they hide his body?
Yes, if they are the ones that did it, yes.
I guess for me, I wonder if after Charles's mental break, he realized what this cult was. He had had the vial because he was put in a position where he was to end his life. And that's what that vial was for. And then he's coming to terms with, wait a minute, what am I doing? And wants to get out of the cult. And that is when they come after him.
I actually believe that. Is that your theory? Because I think that's a good one.
Yeah, overall, I mean, there's some details to iron out. For example, what does it mean the way the home was left?
I mean, that could have been all staged. If they did it, that could have been staged so that way people think it might be a die by suicide.
It could be, yeah. I don't struggle with the clothes and I don't struggle with the passport, but I do struggle with at what point did he make Terry the beneficiary? Was it under pressure? And at what point did he write the other note that says, whatever it said, maybe like the pressure was too great or something like that. Or did he write this way ahead of time when he would originally plan to take his own life and the cult staged those notes there at that time?
Gosh darn it. My guess is, and this is my sort of where I'm thinking, he had the did he book the trip after the hospital?
Was
it already booked?
I'm not 100% sure, but the way that it sounded from his mother was that he got out of the hospital and then he kind of got back in tune with whatever he was doing and booked this trip. Which,
in tune with whatever he was doing with the cult?
Like it just sounded like he was kind of disillusioned with the cult, or with Terry, rather, and he kind of got back in the swing of work, booking the trip, things like that. For me, I wonder if he wanted to go to India as a means to separate himself for a period of time so he can kind of get his head on straight.
Yeah, part of me wonders if they knew the trip was booked. Okay, so he, in my opinion, I think this is what I think. He tries to die by suicide.
whenever he was hospitalized. He ingested whatever they gave him, and then it didn't kill him. It just made him loopy, right? So he's in the hospital. They're trying to figure it out. He's not going to tell them, like, hey, I tried to die by suicide for this cult. Mm-hmm. When he, like, snaps out of it, he then is like, okay, you know what? This is crazy. Like, I'm not going to do this. My mom is here. But the cult's realizing that he's pulling back and trying to space himself out, which is why they keep asking his mom to leave, because they're, like, trying to reconvince him to, you know, stick to the mission.
Yeah.
Then they realize that they have a sort of an opportunity because his family thinks he's going to India. So they somehow arrange him to die, hide the body and all that, knowing they have bought themselves time.
Well, then we start talking about they, and we have to consider the money that's involved too. So if we consider that there is more than one person, it's not just Terry acting alone, I would say it's unlikely that all members of the organization know these covert things that they're doing, like taking people out, wiping people off the map that are a threat to the organization, right? So I assume they're top-level leaders that are assisting Terry. She can't do it alone, right?
So have you ever read the book The Firm by John Grisham?
Ooh, was there a movie?
Yes, but the book is fabulous. It's probably my second favorite John Grisham book of all of it. But what it's about is a law firm that's a mafia house, right? And they're all organized crime, and they do the books and the legal work and the taxes and all that to basically hide money for illegal enterprises. And they hire in new talent, right? So they hire in people fresh out of law school. I mean, okay, this is a made-up book, but hear me out here. Sure. So they bring in, like, top talent. They pay them a ton of money because they're just out of law school. And then once they've, like, the firm gives them a mortgage loan, the firm gives them a car loan, and once they're now ingratiated to the firm, they sort of start giving them some dishonest work to do also, because they obviously have to have honest work to start with. And then they're in a, and then when they find out, like, oh my gosh, this is a mafia thing, they're already in so deep that, like, they'd have to literally sell everything and go bankrupt. So they're in a position where they're like, I don't know what to do. So I see that as what's happening here. Like, she brings in the people, and then once they're at a point where, like, she knows she has control, that's when she starts saying, hey, we're going to kill some people.
So do you think Charles knew that?
No. My guess would be that he was dying by suicide, unless you think that the first whatever happened to put him in the hospital was... No, if that was not voluntary, I think that he would have told at that point. Like, if they tried to kill him and failed, I think he would have told at that point.
Not unless he already had information that could implicate him in something.
What do you mean?
I mean, let's say he gradually was beginning to understand what was happening within this cult. And he didn't do anything about it. And then the guilt or something sends him into a mental break. And he doesn't say anything about it because he's worried he's complicit or he can be linked to this somehow. So when he's released, he just kind of wants to break ties with the cult. And they're like, you know too much and you can't leave. So he books a trip to India to create distance and space. And they're like, oh no, you think you're going to India? We're going to take care of this now. So they had to make it look like he disappeared.
I'm not on board.
Okay, fair.
I'm on board with everything else. I just think the first one was likely he was manipulated into believing that he needed to die by suicide.
And honestly, that's where I am. I think he was totally in with the cult and he believed everything and he believed that he should die by suicide. And, you know, these members who were really in it, they had no fear of death because you would only be going to another plane of existence, right? You're not actually dying. So he's all in it, but at the end, you know, he's thinking, I don't want to do this. I'm not ready to die.
Right. And, like, his mom comes and his, you know, his family's around him and he's like, oh, like, maybe I'm not ready for this, you know? And that's why he then goes on to, like, draw back and decide what he wants to do. And then at that point is when they have to push buttons and do what they need to do to him.
So
I straight up think this is murder.
Inevitably, I do too. But there's just a couple of details I don't understand, which is...
It's so weird that we don't think it was a died by suicide for the cult. And we both end up in murder. Now, hold on. Let me clarify that. A died by suicide at the hands of a cult is, in my opinion, still murder.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But that's of your own physical free will. Right? Like, if you choose to die by suicide for a cult, I think you are completely coerced and it's not okay and, like, it is completely murder. But you did it yourself, right? Like, physically, whatever. I think in this situation, it's murder and he did not do it himself. Right.
So what I want to know is, A, what's in this for Terry? Yes, she is somehow getting everybody to will their assets to her.
Money and power.
That's an age-old motive, right?
Right. Like, not only is she getting the money, though, she now can, like, manipulate other people by saying, oh, you're not going to do what I want? Huh. Neither did this person or this person or this person or this person. And look, they're all deceased.
So, yeah. I mean... I wish I could think of a better reason, but honestly, that's where I was at too. You know, is she funding her organization and her lifestyle, whatever that was? Maybe I shouldn't say lifestyle, but her life with other people's assets.
And I'm about to get deep in the psyche of this, but my guess is, and this is, y'all, I am not educated in this. This is not something that I know, but I watch enough true crime shows, you know? She was powerless growing up, so all she wants is to be able to exert control and power.
That's very fitting. Okay, so we have that. Then my question is, as weird as the clothes are, I get that. I feel like I get that. He could have done that at any time, or they could have done that at any time, but when were these letters written, and were they coerced?
Tell me what the content of them was again.
So there were two notes, and they were very quickly written. And one was, I came under a bad influence, and I was trying to fight it myself. And the other was his last will and testament, naming Terry as the executor.
So read me that one sentence one more time.
I came under a bad influence, and I was trying to fight it myself.
My guess is that's the cult.
And I think you could either think that, or was it his mental health?
No, I think it was the cult. I think he was trying to tell people that, like, he got manipulated and he tried to get out himself, and then this is what happened.
So he, in essence, threatened the livelihood of the cult. But when did he write them, and was he under duress? Or were they from when he stayed or was contemplating, perhaps, taking his own life for the cult?
No.
So you think he was forced to write them?
No, I think the second one is him trying to come clean, or the first one, rather, is him trying to come clean. I don't think they were written in the order you're reading them. I think the will was written first. Then when he had a change of heart, he was trying to say, like, basically he's trying to rewrite his will and all that. And... that turned into just a sentence because he probably, like, got interrupted it or didn't know how to address it, and then he was murdered. So I think he wrote the will, and then he was going to say, like, listen, I was under the influence of whatever power that cult had, and now I'm not, so let's re-sort of organize my life.
Yeah, and to me, It's limitless where his body could have been disposed with all the different branches.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
My best guess would be Texas, since that is where Terry was. But you know what? Then again, he's in Chicago. Why lug a body back to Dallas?
You're assuming that that's where it was.
That's true, too.
You don't know where it happened.
I don't know. I guess the most...
Like, just so you know, when you tell me the case, the first thing I do is go in the Charlie Project, right? And grab the number of the investigative agency, because we always include that in a description. And I grab, you know, the pertinent information, the date, where they disappeared from and all that. And I literally wrote, he disappeared apparently from his home. But we don't know where he disappeared from.
We don't even know when in that 2-and-change-week gap he did disappear.
Amy, I'm done with these cases where there's a huge time frame.
You know, every time I look at a case like this, I feel that pang of frustration. And then, I know this happens to you too because we talk about it, then we feel even more compelled to do it because who else is telling the story?
Agreed 100%. That's why we do this. And, you know, we have been saying more recently, 3 out of 4 episodes probably a month, that, oh, this is going to be a short episode because not a whole lot out there. I think we just need to say it on an episode that you should anticipate not hour-long episodes for the most part anymore because we're past the big cases. You know, like, yes, there are tons of media out there about some of them, but we want to keep digging into the lesser-known cases.
Yeah, and you always have a lot to bring to the table. I hope I do, too, in our discussions. So I appreciate that because you've given me more to think about than what I originally did.
Oh, for sure. And I feel the same way about you. We challenge each other, which is why we have these conversations. We haven't said in a long time, but we have when we get on this call, right, we just picked up the phone and we talked about our live coming up this weekend. And the first thing I said was, this Gabby case is crazy. And Amy responded, and I was like, no, wait, hold it for Sunday. Because we naturally have these conversations.
Yep, totally.
All right, that's where I land. Murder.
Murder. I don't think that this had to do with anything other than this cult.
I would agree with that. And I want to be clear again, I've already said it, but... murder at the hands of the cult, not murder at the hands of himself for the cult.
Yeah, I think that's a clear distinction to make. So,
yeah,
like I said, when you look up Charles, very, very sadly, you won't find much at all. On the other hand, if you're interested in being swayed or convinced or just curious about this cult, you can find a decent amount of information on Terry Hoffman. So, like I said, she died in the last 6 years or so. She was looked into because of these suspicious deaths, but there was never any sufficient evidence to connect her, as suspicious as it is. So, there's your homework, guys. And then, of course, as usual, tell us your thoughts and your theories. It's actually been amazing to get into it with you guys. I found it hard on some occasions to catch up with the discussion, but I work on it all the time.
Me too, and I love it. I look in and I'm like, I agree. Ooh, what about that? You know, and you guys are amazing with theories too.
So thank you again, as always, for listening.
We'll be back next week with a whole new case.
Bye. For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
The Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production
by Amy Lamar.